This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best-tasting protein out there. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order at BlackStarLabs.com. Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Kevin. Just a quick heads up that we had some audio difficulties, and what that resulted in was using some different software, taking an hour and a half to get the show started, and a little bit of echoing in my voice. So just a heads up on that. It's just my voice that's messed up. So hopefully you can still get a lot out of what John and Lee have to say. And it went a little crazy. So I still lots of good content. We hit a good roundtable and definitely came together as a really good show. So I hope you enjoy it. Here it is.
All right, this is the podcast that we're doing this week. We're recording right now. We spent the last hour trying to get this podcast to work, and we're recording. So whatever you guys get this week, this is it. Hi, I'm Kevin Larrabee. This is episode number 156. Along with me is Dr. Jonathan Fass. What up, John? And then we got Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What up, Lee? All right, let's go into this week's news, because that's about all the time we have. I'm not kidding. This is the show this week. All right, first thing we got.
I wonder how many first-time lists we got.
That'd be so awesome.
I just went, what the hell is this crap?
I'll record a message preemptively letting people know what to expect. So
that has become Speedcast.
All right. Well, I did just... that burping was from Spikes. This is... So, anyways, Iron Spike, go buy at TNation.com, TMuscle.com. All right. First off, we got a Destination Abs update. Lee, we're doing Destination Abs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
What's up? You did a blog post about it last week, and I think, people in the comments was a little controversial.
I know. It's funny how angry people get about your transformation process.
No, people were literally getting mad. Like, what are you doing?
I don't really know why. It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I think it's because in the midst of you becoming who you need to become, I crushed some people's dreams who just thought that they had to lose 10 more pounds when really they need to lose 50. Yeah. And they're upset with me about that. And there's nothing I can do about it. I thought your pre-after picture was very sexy.
Yeah, very nice. I do.
Love
people
the baby
made a lot
oil.
Of comments. I got emails from like my friend Carrie, who actually, hey, what up, Carrie? She listens to the show.
What up, Carrie?
It's like, yeah, one nipple is bigger than the other, and I know I do have. It's because I was cold on, like, I had one hard nipple on one side and the other nipple.
Oh, you're blaming it on the gold? The shrinkage on the gold, is it?
No, yeah. and I'm like, yeah. Someone's like, oh yeah, you look like a crackhead because you look like all dead. You know, like no fat on you. Sorry. We've literally, it's right now, usually we record the shows at 10:30 and it's 11:44.
We've been on here for how long?
For a good hour and 15 minutes. And we've recorded up to this point, 2 minutes and 45 seconds of audio.
I think the thing to really point out about the transformation is it's not as if that's what you're trying to carry for the rest of your life. That's just what you're going to get down to. And then as you increase in mass with lean gains, you will get bigger and bigger and bigger. You have very much like a running back type build, you know, like a lower rate, like running back. And that's kind of like how your body, it reminds me of, like with a lot of guys that I've seen. So, you know, it's just, you're just going to be one of those guys that once you get down lean, you're just build it and build it and build it and keep the cut. And that's it. Like people just, they really just take it too personally or something. I don't know, but I think you're going to do great. I don't really, you know, think there's going to be an issue.
Yeah. So we're going to, we're not going to do the roundtable this week, folks, but one of the roundtables that we were going to do was like the holiday game plan. And, you know, is it, you know, I thought this was a really good topic, and Tom Venuto beat me to the punch because he's doing a contest to, like, buy weight to January 1st, lose weight right now.
totally off topic, but I was looking at stuff on Nick Tumanello's blog, and you know it's a very simple point, but I think it's a lot of times I slip up and people in the industry slip up is like distinguishing fat loss and weight loss. I don't know why I just mentioned that. Again, I just had a spike, so we're going really quickly right now. So no round table on the hobby game plan this week.
Okay.
Mailbag.
Oh.
Yeah, we're skipping that stuff.
Oh, we're doing it. Okay.
We don't have time.
They see me rolling.
Ah, that's such a good song. Oh man, I wish we could do an off-topic this week so I could sing that. First,
you can do an off-topic. It can just be later, and it's possible that Lee won't be there.
It's true. Okay.
And then you and I could discuss flash forward because we won't be ruining it for her.
Did somebody fart?
Flash forward.
You know,
that's an inside joke on flash forward.
I know.
That's off-topic discussion, but the. Anyways, more stuff on Destination Apps. I also posted a blog post on it on thefitcast.com, and again, we will have pictures probably every Tuesday. I'm going to take them every Monday, and we will post them on Tuesday. And yeah, this is going to be fun. Like, if you look at that picture, man, like that would be good to get down to that. That's and I think that's like Lee, you do that for all your like online.
No, not all of it. I mean, it's experiment. I mean, it's a lot easier to do that kind of stuff with lower body weight. You know, people that are within a range of somewhere between 20 to 35 pounds in that kind of range, when you can really kind of see the outline of what they've got going on. And it's a complete estimate, but it is encouraging. You know, the people I can do it for and that we're testing it with, they really enjoy it, you know. It's just kind of like morphing software, but it's not. It's certainly experimental stage. So
it's kind of like that stuff for the kids that get abducted and they show what they're going to look like in 10 years or something like that.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen that. It's on like America's Most Wanted.
Yeah. That's. I mean, it's the same kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, it's like in that thing that they do with like, "Honey, I'm Killing the Kids," and they show them how they look when they get out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's
oh man.
You know what I'm talking? And where they always look like they're really shady, like drug dealers at the end. You know?
With like thin mustache.
They don't just get fat, they get creepy.
Yeah.
You know, they'll like lose teeth. They got like moles out of nowhere and, you know, look like they're getting ready to rob you.
Yeah, so put down the box of cookies, guys.
Yeah.
You're going to turn into like a thief or something. Yeah, we'll talk about that more when we have some more time. But you know what? I thought it was internet accountability. This is where it's at. And for those that did email me about what John and I talked about last week about putting together like a once a week post on thefitcast.com just for internet accountability and like maybe some kind of contest thing. I'll keep your information. And if we end up doing something like that, I still haven't had a chance to talk to Lee and John about it, but if we do end up doing that, then we'll contact you down the road. Okay. Take a deep breath here, guys. First email comes from Tim. It says, "Hi, my main goal is to gain healthy weight and put on some mass. I've been swimming 90 laps every morning and lifting weights in the afternoon. Most of the time, I swim half a mile after I lift weights. I lift 6 days a week, one body part a day. My question is, the second swim of the day detrimental to my goals? I try to eat plenty of clean foods, but need more fat. What are your thoughts?" And as a quick dietary breakdown that pretty much has no fat in it.
Yeah.
Of just pretty much nuts, and that's it. So I'm going to have you guys both hit on this. Lee, what do we got for Tim?
Well, it's not so much that the swimming is detrimental to putting on mass. I mean, you can put on mass if you do a lot of high, cardio activity, which, you know, swimming's very cardio intensive. So it's not that the swimming is detrimental, that you're going to be burning more calories. You're going to be expending more energy. So you're going to have to eat more food, and the food that you're already eating. I mean, I think that on a low energy. I mean, granted, you didn't put the amounts of the food that you're eating, so I don't know exactly like how much oatmeal or how much cereal or how much peanut butter, or, you know, all these kind of things, but it doesn't seem like an awfully lot of food for the fact that you're, you know, you're doing swimming and you're doing lifting and whatever you could do for the day. So it seems to me that you're going with kind of like more of a generic meal plan. It's not like it's bad or anything, but if you're trying to put on mass and you're having a hard time putting on mass, the simple of it is you need to eat more. And as far as getting in more fats, I mean, yeah, you know, maybe just load up on the almonds and the peanut butter. But I guess I'm just kind of confused to some degree with the question of like, you know, is he trying to put on more, you know, lean body mass? And if so, the issue should really be in the lifting weights and focusing on that and then eating more. And I mean, the swimming isn't really an issue, and it just needs to be made sure that you eat enough. So I guess it's just not really that complicated. You need to eat more. And if you want to get in some more fats, then you can start increasing your calories by eating more fats. And it seems like you're getting in a pretty decent amount of protein and carbohydrates. So I guess you know what you need to do. Just do it. Does that make sense?
Does to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Tim. Really, does it make sense to you? Tim got it.
I don't think he's here.
Tim's not here.
Oh. I made that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
John, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the idea of the swimming, I mean, there is such a thing as fiber conversion. That's what people get all caught up about in these internet forums about, oh, no, I can't run a mile because then I'll lose all my muscle, which is silly nonsense. So you really see fiber conversion in extreme, you know, cardio sports, you know, marathon runners or half marathons or whatever. It doesn't really occur because you're swimming, you know, 90 laps, is a lot. It's a decent amount of laps, but quite frankly, we also have to look at the idea of how much weight would you even lose if that were the case. I mean, is it really, you know, the benefits that you'll get from the swimming that are probably physiological, psychological, you know, long-term health, you know, whatever. Does it really matter? I don't think that it does. If you can't put on the extra 3 pounds, I don't think that's a big deal. What I'd be more interested in is just the workout breakdown. I mean, if you want to do a body part split, that's fine. I don't think it's the best way to do things, but as long as you adhere to certain principles, then you can certainly gain mass from a body part split. But one body part a day, 6 times a week, I don't know what the frequency is. The research shows us 2 to 3 times a week. Yeah. In frequency is going to always be better than 1 time a week. Intensity is always better than volume. So, in, you know, when we're looking at like putting on mass, at least, so that you'll probably get a lot more bang for your buck if you're really looking at your workouts and making sure they at least adhere to those basic principles. Most of the time, it can be kind of difficult to take a body part split and get in, you know, 2 to 3 times of frequency per body part. And I hate that term. And also the intensity, because you're doing typically based on volume, the weight, the difficulty, the intensity that you're lifting at is usually sacrificed because you can't do volume and intensity forever and not burn yourself out. So I think you're going to be better off looking at those types of factors and not worrying about the swimming. And then, like what Lee said, just eat, and that should be it.
I'm going to bump down our list of questions to another nutrition question for Lee. It's from Michelle. Hi, gang. I have questions about 2 diets. I don't follow either of these diets, but I know a lot of people who do, and I've seen some unbelievable things, so I wanted your thoughts. First, the raw foods diet. I know that to some people, the raw foods diet may seem like a very hippie vegan thing to do. I watched the movie Simply Raw. I recommend watching it if you haven't. It's very inspiring. At least watch the YouTube trailer a couple weeks ago. However, what it did for some people with diabetes is remarkable. I showed it to other people I know with diabetes, and they began a raw foods diet. Since then, they have shown the same results. What do you guys think about a raw foods diet? Obviously, it is working great for some people, and therefore there must be some merit to it. On the other hand, the diet is very low in protein and very low in fat. Is there any crossover between a raw foods diet and someone working out? The other diet is the primal diet, which is sort of the opposite. Eat like our ancestors did. It makes sense to avoid all the processed foods in our diets these days, but many primal eaters eat lots of organ meats and really fatty meats. I think she means organic. Is this healthy? Sorry for the random questions, but I was wondering if you guys had any experience with these diets. If so, how they relate to working out and getting huge like Kevin is. That makes no sense. Michelle. Editor note.
The thing with any sort of change in dietary activity, I mean, you're talking about people going from having diabetes, which classically most people who have type 2 diabetes have very unhealthy diets. And so you take anyone that starts to eat a better variety of foods, and it's going to have a positive effect on your health. It doesn't matter if it's raw or if it's more grains. I mean, it's, as long as they decrease the caloric intake and start to increase caloric expenditure and eat better foods or more variety of foods, you're going to see a positive health effect from that. So in that aspect, you could put someone on a low-carb diet, you could put someone on a paleo diet, you could put someone on a South Beach diet. As long as the caloric intake is going to be less and they're probably going to see a decrease in fat and start to lose fat and all this kind of things, their levels are going to get better. And that it's just kind of a no-brainer. And there's no real reason to say that one particular diet is better than another. There are studies that compare different diets and what they do and different effects. And it can range. At the same time, there's never been one study that conclusively shows that one diet is particularly better than another. I am more inclined to like protein-based diets that have animal-based proteins in them overall because of the variety of minerals and vitamins that they provide for people. I think that vegans and vegans, not so much vegetarians, as long as they're getting animal protein in, but can run into potentially more deficiency issues than, say, someone who's just, vegetarian with dairy or egg-based products, that kind of thing. So when it comes to the raw diet, I've looked into the raw thing, and basically what you're seeing is there's a proponents for people in which that they say the enzymic activity of the foods are stronger and to cook them destroys them. And to some degree, there's certain foods that, yes, you could say that cooking them decreases their potency. There's also other foods in which that cooking increases potency. And then also some of that is just in lab settings. We don't even know what that does when you mix food in the body with other foods and how that processes itself. There's so many things basically that go along with testing something like this that to say, oh, this one food eaten in a normal day with activity that we do is going to be better raw versus cooked, these kind of things, is not a really easy thing to do. And for every one food that could possibly be better in a raw state, there can be another one that is enhanced by cooking. There's all types of different things that happen to food when you cook them and then when you allow them to cool after cooking. And it's a very, very big process. And the change in nutrients and efficiency is on such a small level anyway that I find it to be something that there's really no need to really go into a large investigation of. I think if you're just eating a carrot, it doesn't really matter if you're cooking the carrot or the carrot is raw. I think enjoy the carrot and you're going to, get the best thing that you can from that. I think it makes, more sense to focus on just the variety of the foods and focusing on your servings in a day. So with the raw food thing, it's just a mixed bag. I think that you're going to find some foods that, yes, are probably better raw, others that are probably better cooked. And as far as if it's better to eat as if our ancestors eat, it's a common argument. A lot of people like to throw that out, but they don't realize that, one, life expectancy wasn't so great back then. And, granted, you could eat very whole, clean foods, and there's nothing wrong with eating whole, clean foods. That's what we all are a proponent of. Eat your veggies. If you aren't a vegetarian, then eat your meats and get a variety. Try and stay away from processed foods. I think that's eating a pretty like our ancestry diet, if you will. I don't really see how. We had grains back then. We just didn't have certain the processes of what we do to grains back then. There really isn't that big of a difference. The actual fruits and vegetables have been manipulated throughout the years, so even if we wanted to eat a lot of things the way that they did back then, it's not even possible with crossbreeding and hybrids that have happened over time. A strawberry isn't what a strawberry used to be. So I guess my short answer of is eat whole foods where you can, you know. Try to stay away from a lot of processed foods and get a high variety diet, and you're going to find that that increases your health overall. It really is as simple as balance and trying to get a variety in your nutrition so you cover a variety of nutrients and don't have to depend on supplements as much as possible. And I think that any professional would agree with that. If they don't, then, you know, chances are that there's an agenda behind it, you know, because after that, it just starts to get, you know, incredibly involved in micro optimizations and, you know, the right for your kind of body type diet. Some people like a little bit more carbs. Some people like a little bit more veggies. Some people like a little bit more protein, and that's where it becomes personal. So I think that answered the question. It's a little bit long-winded, but I just, whenever I see those questions about comparing these diets to that diet and I see that these things increase health, it's just, it's very common sense. When you just start to eat better in general, you're going to see a health increase. And the rest of it is just, you know, what sells the books.
So it's okay to be a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll.
Exactly.
Where's the wisdom, guys?
I should have just said that.
Next time.
Yep.
Lee, how are you doing on time?
I'm fine. Let's roll.
Give me a number.
I'm going to go with 20.
Oh, holy balls. Yes. You guys, how do you guys feel about doing the roundtable right now? And then when Lee passes the bounce, we'll do John's stuff. This is some behind-the-scenes stuff that you guys are going to get to right now.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Then we are going to take a quick break. We're going to record the roundtable, and then we will do some more mailbag. Okay, we are into the roundtable discussion, and the roundtable question slash discussion that I am going to pose is the holiday game plan. What should people do in regards to training and nutrition around this holiday season? Because I think a lot of people, what they generally do is, you know, you get to this point, and for guys it's bulking, you know, or you're getting into the winter and you're going to eat junk anyways on Thanksgiving and Christmas and or the Hanukkah or the holidays or whatever you may celebrate. And, you know, they kind of wait till January 2nd, I guess, because you're hungover January 1st and then you're going on the 2nd. So, you know, what should people do? Should they just kind of, you know, say that they're going to give in to the temptations of the holidays and wait to start whatever they would like to start in January 2nd. And I'm going to go to Lee first because obviously Lee dealing with a lot of fat loss clients and people that would like to lose, you know, have goals of fat loss in their future. You know, what you usually recommend? Like, obviously, I guess a good example is what we're doing right now together, but what do you think?
I think the issue is with the holidays. It's not about one day, you know. It's not about Thanksgiving and it's not about Christmas. If it was just one day for people, I don't really think that it would be an issue. I tell all my clients, friends, myself, whatever, I have fun on Thanksgiving and I have fun on Christmas. Like, I don't restrict anything that I do on those days, and that's why you do what you do to take care of yourself, so that when the times come for you to enjoy time with your family and stuff like that, you don't have to worry about one day ruining anything, because it's just one day. It shouldn't be an issue. Problem is the parties and the gatherings and the leftovers, and it becomes this marathon of food, you know, and it becomes this just onslaught of lots of, you know, really calorie heavy foods over and over again, lots of social activities, lots of drinking, things like that. So, you know, I always tell people to enjoy themselves on the holiday, but during the rest of the times to exercise some moderation. And in general, I like to provide myself and my clients, if you know, if they're looking to keep up during the holidays with challenges and keep everything going just as it normally would. Like, you know, I'm doing a challenge right now in my forums. We're doing a challenge, and you know, so far the first week people lost 77 pounds, and it's during a holiday season, if you will. You know, and it's just, there's no reason that you can't keep things going and act completely as normal. I think it just becomes an excuse. People are like, oh, it's the holidays. You know, I want to let loose. I want to live. And
Well, that's it, right? It's like, oh, no, you know, I deserve this. I've worked hard all year and I'm with family and you want to enjoy the time with family and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying time with family. There's nothing wrong with enjoying, you know, a couple days or a week with family. It's just, are you really, you know, acting the way that you want to act throughout all of November and December and the beginning of January? Like, is that really, you know, you really have to have all that indulgence? Mm-hmm. Because it doesn't become celebration after that. It becomes something else. And it becomes, you know, it becomes a negative act. You know, there is positive eating. You know, there is celebratory eating and gathering and positives to eating food with the people that you love. There is positiveness to that, but there's also a negativeness to it. Just as there was drinking, you know, just as there is with anything else, there's negative ways to do things and there's positive ways to do things. And I think that for most people, they just put on their screw it caps and they start to overindulge. And I find most of the time the people that do the worst are the people who are most frustrated with the results, though, and who really aren't getting much of anywhere and just use it as an excuse to say, well, hell, things aren't going good anyway. You know, I'm not really getting the results I want anyway, so I might as well enjoy the holidays and I'll just start things back over in the new year. It's a classic behavioral pattern that is almost a tradition. You know, it's almost ingrained into our society and beliefs, particularly in North America. I can't say that this is true worldwide as much. People in different countries have a lot of different opinions about how they express things, but certainly in North America, this is how we do things. We, you know, are indulgent and get obese during the holidays and just pack it all on and make our New Year's resolutions, and we're perfectly content with carrying on that facade. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, as far as like a tip or a hint or whatever, I propose to challenge yourself to lose weight during the holidays if you still have to lose it, and to have some sort of control, and you know, to enjoy yourself when the time comes, of course, and to spend time with your family. But I do not think that the holidays are a one-way ticket to gluttony. Just, I don't think that's ever good, and it certainly shouldn't be a celebratory thing.
Well, I think definitely, it's helped me to see that there's kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel very shortly. I mean, there's Thanksgiving where I get to, you know, lift hard and, you know, get what is really going to be like a refeed. And same thing on Christmas Day. It's just, you know, you stay locked in for 4 weeks and then you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel where you get to have some fun. You get to be with family. You get to have the turkey. You get to have, I think... You know, one of the greatest things ever is that I go to my aunt and uncle's house and they have someone there, side of the family, that makes this like seven-layer chocolate pudding, like with cake in it and like whipped cream or some other stuff in it. And it's like if I had to miss out on that, man, I just wouldn't be Christmas.
I think
everyone has something like that you know, it's just like really in the family that people love.
Absolutely.
I think it really it depends.
I think, John, what do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think that if you just started a diet or exercise routine, or you just, you know, or you may not be as consistent with those routines, then don't take the risk. You've got to commit yourself to what your ultimate goals are. I think if you've been at it for a little bit of a while, if you've been dieting for a while, if you're consistent, if you don't have issues with slip-ups or in falling off the wagon, go have a ball and don't worry about it.
Well, the problem is, like, it's like turning into, you know, the way I've seen it happen is, and it happened with my clients last year, but, you know, it literally starts on the, like, Thanksgiving day it starts, then there's leftovers for a week,
then people start bringing in cookies and stuff to work because it's getting towards the holidays, and they're like, okay, well, it's still that time. Like, it's literally, it's a 30-day thing.
It is, but I think that there's a difference between the 2 or 3 days or 8 days of Hanukkah or whatever it is that you're going to have times where you may be eating outside of what you normally do versus those days in between that are not. It's part of the process, but it doesn't have to be part of your process. I mean, if I have a goal to lose, 30 pounds and I've been at it for a couple months, I'm consistent, I'm dedicated to it, I can have, cheat days and whatever and breaks and not have it affect me, then go for it on the holiday. Enjoy yourself, enjoy your family. You can most and the things that I find is that people that are that consistent really aren't going to slip up anyway. I mean, they'll maybe have an extra bite of the turkey, and then they'll do an extra hour of cardio to offset it, which is ridiculous anyway. But they're fine. Those aren't the people that you have to worry about. The people you have to worry about are the people that are good, good, good. They have a taste of pie, horseradish or something, and then they're gone. Mm-hmm. I don't know why pie and horseradish.
I was about to be like, that is really...
Yeah, disgusting.
I've never had that before.
Yeah, and you probably shouldn't. I'll give you a dollar if you eat it, though, on air.
Right now?
Yeah.
All right, I'll go to the store.
Awesome. But yeah, that's what I think. It's just for those people, I think that they have to be stricter. I think they have to remind themselves of what their goal is, and if that means bring the cookies into work and give them away, if it means throw them down the drain and never look at them again, then they've got to do that, because I've seen too many times, literally, people, you have a bite of pumpkin pie and suddenly it all goes to hell and you're never back on track again. And there are people that exist like that, and you've just got to work with what you've got. And that tells you that you're not ready to really, go back to maybe a way that you used to eat in the past and be able to recover from it. So
I think it's a very good point. And a lot of people, and you brought up the being able to throw away the cookies, but I think this is a big take-home message. You can throw away food. And I know that it seems taboo and wasteful, and when you think of what food is to so many people in other places, like, I get it, and being wasteful of food is a hard thing to do, but it's at the end of the day, it's an excuse, and you don't have to have it around. You can give it away, you can throw it away, and you can get it out of your house. There's been times when I've had things in my home I've had to throw away. I'm not perfect. I mean, like, I can kill off some stuff, like, really quick, and I have to throw it away, or I have to, like, give it away to somebody because I just can't keep it in my house. I will go to town on it. Mm-hmm. There's some things I just can't say no to. Yeah. And, and I realize that it can be detrimental to what's going on. So, and also, Thanksgiving and Christmas do not have to be overly bad meals. Sure, there's the dessert aspect, but you've got turkey. You've got potatoes, you've got greens, you've got beans. I mean, granted, I'm a Southern gal, but, and then, with Islamic and Hanukkah things, I know that there's some great foods that you can have in there that are healthy,
mm-hmm.
And there's no need for it to be just this completely obscene event. Sure, you might have like an obscene moment or two, but the leftovers and everything, there's no reason why they can't be perfectly good foods that you just eat all the time anyway. And that's another of my kind of feeling. Like, I find it when people are incredibly overly restrictive of what they eat all the time, chicken breast and broccoli. And then they do get a taste of, like, the stuffing in the pie, they go nuts. And it's like, yeah, I'd go nuts too. So maybe, this is like kind of realize as well that you don't always have to be so overly restrictive, and you can work good tasting foods into your diet as you need as well.
And I think also, like, even when I was in my best shape, like right before grad school, I was eating fairly strictly. I was working out very consistently, and I would still adhere to certain rules. I mean, no trans fats in the diets, no high fructose corn syrups in the diets or whatever. So in times like holidays, as long as the food fit, I was okay with it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm good. But I'm not going to, compromise what I believe are healthy choices versus just having some good food to eat.
Well, not to mention, that food doesn't even taste good anyway. You know what I mean?
Like, I can't stand soda.
There's a lot of those foods. Well, the thing is there's a lot of those foods that – now, soda is one thing because it's just a – sugary devil of sweetness. But, you know, the majority of foods that you get that are prepackaged and have a lot of high fructose corn syrup or store pies or things like that, they don't taste as good as the real thing anyway.
They don't
taste as good as like the real deal. And that's something that I try and, you know, tell people a lot. It's like, if you're going to indulge on the pumpkin pie and if you're going to indulge on those things, make it real. You know, put really good stuff in there. You know, don't go for just a crap, you know, stuff. You know, take the time to slave in the kitchen. You burn some calories while doing it, and you really deserve a, like, healthy tasting pie versus, like, you know, Mrs. Smith's, which it can do okay, but it's not homemade.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah,
so just enjoy. Kevin really did run off to get those ingredients.
Did he really leave?
I think he did.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do we do now?
I guess we could go on with the show.
All right, let's just, we're doing it live.
I'm doing it live, damn it.
We're doing it without him. So, John, get the next question.
Yeah, I guess
or,
so.
Or should I read it to you? What's the next one?
I don't know. Without our producer, we're lost.
And I feel like I don't know what to do, but I'm gonna take the reins. So.
Are you guys still there?
I really want to remain quiet. So he starts freaking out.
Did we make it?
Did you fake run? Did you do?
No, this is running, right? Oh man! All right, that's the roundtable. We're gonna stop recording. We're gonna go back to the mailbag.
There are no words.
Doing a lot.
What'd you do? Boom.
What do you mean? No. Okay, hopefully you're recording again. This software that I'm not familiar with. We're gonna say that we are, and that we're back with the mailbag. And this is going to be a question that we have for Jonathan Fast Sr. And if John stops typing and going on Facebook while we record, I'll ask him. Johnny, do we have to wait for you?
Called you out.
There is no Jonathan Fast Sr. I don't know who you're talking about.
Are you ready, John? Do I have to call you out like I have to do for the 13-year-old hockey players when they're joking around?
Go ahead.
This question from Sarah says, hello all. First of all, I'm a 28-year-old 5'1 female who comes in between 15 and 80% body fat depending on my diet factor. And I've been lifting seriously for about 2 years. My question concerns my tendency towards lower body injuries. When I first started lifting on a serious level, I noticed a lot of pain in my hips and piriformis muscle. I took a break from heavy lifting and began a stretching regimen focused on hip mobility, and then the pain has more or less subsided. I went back to my regular squatting, straight-legged deadlift, sumo squats, and eventually developed pain in my left knee. A trainer at my gym suggested it was due to tight hamstrings and suggested a more intense stretching routine. Sure enough, the pain in my knee eventually went away, and I went back to my old squatting, deadlifting, etc. Fast forward to today, and I've been seeing chiropractor for what appears to be cervical facet joint inflammation.
Facet.
Sorry, doctor. He's been adjusting my back once a week and giving me electrotherapy on the affected area. It seems to be helping, but I've decided to learn my lesson and give up squatting and deadlifting altogether. I'm not a professional athlete, and the risk of injury is no longer worth it for me. My question is this: is it responsible for kinder exercises such as the leg press?
Oh my god!
Wow!
Sorry.
Is it possible for kinder exercises such as the leg press machine to provide the same results as squatting? I suppose this is more of a question for John, so I'd like to ask him what he would recommend to someone in my situation. Please, to God, don't let Kevin read this.
Thanks
to you all for such a great show, Sarah.
Sarah, you know what, I got up early today. I've been in this habit of getting up like at 7 a.m., even on Saturday and Sunday, so I can kind of keep a rhythm for the rest of the week. And I had a spike an hour ago, and now it's worn off a little bit.
Feel the rhythm.
Shaking.
Alrighty.
Dr. Fass.
The first thing that sticks out to me is just a consistent injury list that you think is being caused by the squatting, the deadlifts. That to me, in general, I would tend to look more at what are you doing, what's your form, and then is it truly the exercises or is it something else going on that the exercises might not be helping, and again, because of form. You know, it's hard. It's hard to say squats are making my knees bad. Can they? Absolutely, if they're performed incorrectly. On the other hand, though, are you doing something else outside and that is caught, you know, I mean, it could be anything. It could be the way that you walk. It could be a running routine that you do. Who knows? Or any of the above, none of the above. But then squatting just becomes too much too soon because you're never truly recovering from whatever injury you're getting on the outside. So it can be hard to say it's one exercise or another. But having said that, I mean, there are certainly exercises that you might be able to do that would be quote-unquote kinder. I don't love a leg press machine because it's just – it's basically undoing what I just said. So I'm saying, you know what, maybe it's your form. Maybe it's the way that you move. Maybe you're just doing too much weight for the time being and you need to, you know, just go a little bit lighter and to focus on your form. And then we take a leg press, which doesn't teach you any form at all. So so I would be considering that, having someone really, really evaluate your form and someone that's an expert. I don't know if your trainer at the gym is good or not. Tight hamstrings, maybe they can affect the knee, but quite frankly, it's harder. I mean, you've really got to have a lacking range of motion for tight hamstrings to affect your knee to that extent, especially when we talk about squatting, where the hamstrings will not – any shortening of the hamstring is not going to affect the way that you squat at the knee necessarily. You've got to have like epically short hamstrings for that to happen, and then you'd have some much more problems than just what we're talking about there. I mean, you wouldn't be able to straighten your legs. But stretching can always improve things if there are mobility issues, because we're going to get mobility from areas that we don't want it to make up for the fact that we don't have mobility in areas that we do want. So any stretching routine where you're looking at some range of motion issues can probably be helpful, not typically hurt an issue. Other than that, I mean, so what kinder exercises? I think less weight. You know, if we're looking at unilateral exercises, that could certainly help, although you have to, again, be cautious about the weight in your form. So things like reverse lunges and bridges and things like that. One resource that you might consider is Mike Robertson's Bulletproof Knees. I think that's a really nice book to pick up that might help you out in that situation. Cervical facet joints, if that's affecting your knees, I would love to know how, so I wouldn't be worried about that. And that's about it. I don't know.
Nice.
Hey, we got another question. Let's go to this one from Lee. How you doing?
I'm good. I think I wrote one more.
One more? Yeah, okay. That's a good question.
Actually, let me interrupt. Just one more thing that I thought about. Although I agree with the idea of not being a professional athlete, that to me just means you don't need to lift maybe as heavy or maybe as explosively. You know, professional athletes, when we talk about athletic preparation, you're dealing with improving your power, improving strength ratio, which is your strength versus your body weight. So I don't think those exercises are only good for athletes. But so I don't know that you necessarily need to give things up like that. But, you know, the other thing that just occurred to me is that your strength ratio and strength balances may be completely off. So you may need to strengthen your quads. You may need to strengthen your glutes. I don't know what might be weak or what might be strong, but those are other things to consider as well. Sometimes it's not, again, it's not the exercise you're doing. It's just the appropriateness of that exercise at that time. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's all right, man.
My bad, player.
Hey, guys, can I ask a question? Who am I? Who is that?
You're Kevin Larrabee laughing at crap on Skype when I'm answering a question.
It's keyboard cat, John. Just can't laugh at that. Come on.
That's like saying you don't cry while watching Rudy. You cry when you see Rudy and he opens up that letter and he gets accepted to Notre Dame. You cry.
I don't cry at that part. I didn't cry until the very end when his kind of chubby but very sweet roommate is like
John Favreau.
That he's, I can't remember his name, okay?
It's John, the director.
Can I finish? Okay, but anyway, when he is being carried off the field, and then he comes in. You know what? You guys suck. That's when I cry.
Listen to this.
I'm unplugging my headphones just so you guys can hear that.
We're not just a fitness podcast.
Sometimes it barely seems like we are at all.
All right. Question from Rick. Okay, since you were sick from a person who said a while back you never get sick. Sorry, not my fault. Proofread emails. I'm gonna start that again.
You read them on air.
Okay, since you were sick from a person who said you never get sick.
Kevin, since this question is for you, I'm gonna read it for you. Okay, Kevin, since you were sick and from a person who said a while back you never get sick with the flu, did you work out? Or did you take a break from training? When should we not train, and with what symptoms can we train with? Today snapped an almost streak of 2 years of not being sick. I had a stomach virus and said forget it with training today. Rick, Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think you should train when you have the flu if you have a cold or something like that, and you tend to get colds for like three weeks at a time. It's probably all right to train, but, you know, I really wasn't that sick. I had, like, a sore throat, and then I went in and I lifted that day. And about an hour after I lifted, I got home, and I couldn't get out of bed because I felt so horrible. So I don't listen to your body. I mean, don't go to the gym if your energy levels are crap and you feel horrible. I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that, but I just think, you know.
I don't know if 2 years of training every day straight is a good idea, if that's what he's talking about. Can we just throw that out there for discussion?
I don't think he's saying that.
I think he just means, like, without...
Taking a break.
Deload. I've met them.
No, not of not being sick. Not of not training.
Oh, okay. Well...
I'm sure Rick's deloading.
Okay, good. I'm so wrecked.
Good question. Also, vitamin D, a lot of vitamin D. We haven't really talked about swine flu or treatment. I don't think that's in our wheelhouse, but yeah, I popped a lot of vitamin D in those three days. People told me to do that. And it's also like olive leaf extract or something like that. Have you guys heard about this?
Why would you be popping
vitamin D?
On large amounts because you had swine flu.
Because people were telling me that vitamin D is the only thing that has been shown to help swine flu or something like that. I was thinking like 6,000 a day. I'm just curious as the reasoning for why.
I mean, I like vitamin D, don't get me wrong. I'm just curious as the reasoning why vitamin D is...
Honestly, someone's going to have to email us questions at thecast.com and tell us.
I'm going to have to look that one up because that doesn't really make any sense to me. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I can't think of a reason.
On that note, Lee, do you have the bones? I'm looking at the time and it's been... I just don't want to.
Yeah, I know I should. I should go.
Concerned about you.
I know, and I appreciate that.
Stuff to do.
I don't want to miss John answering the PNF stretch question.
Download the podcast. Helps the numbers.
You mean I have to subscribe to this damn thing?
I subscribe to the Leap Heel podcast. Hey, you could even throw up a review on iTunes.
You know, I did review. I said you were sexy.
Oh, that was you?
Yeah, that was me.
Oh, man.
That's my name.
More
said my name
and
everything.
Oh, maybe that was a different one.
Maybe it was.
You do have a lot of the lady fans out there, Kevin.
You know, that was kind of weird.
I know putting this accountability thing on the internet, but getting sexual comments on a blog is kind of weird. Or if that makes any sense. That's PG, right?
Yeah, it's PG.
Wow, we have 226 reviews on iTunes. Holy crap.
You're looking for the sexy one, aren't you?
You know me far too well.
Anyway, I'll go. Okay.
All right.
With the show. Bye.
See you, Appeal. Leap Heel. I just hung up on him. All right. Hey, John.
Hey, Kevin.
There's lots of feedback on these. There's lots of background noise. Is there? We sound awesome.
Cool.
Hey, John, I got a question for you.
What's up?
It's a question from Tim from Bringing England, and I won't do this accent whatsoever. He says this is going to be the last question. We're going to do one more.
Okay.
And we'll save everything else for next time. I like this question. Dear Kevin and the Fitcast crew, first off, love the podcast and learn infinite amounts from you. Thank you very much. I was hoping that Mr. Fast would be able to help me with my problem. Here's the deal. I'm a long distance runner. I also strength train. I score points for that, right? anyway, I've had lateral calf pain in my right leg for about a week now, which has stopped me from being able to run. The right calf is tighter than the left, as is the IT band. I've been to the physio, who did a proper assessment and has found a substantial downward rotation on the right side of my pelvis, which means that I'm overusing the right leg a lot. And the weight distribution is more to the right-hand side. The wear on the sole of the shoes showed what he said was as marked a difference as he has ever seen.
Yeah.
I've been given a PNF stretch exercise, which involves bringing my knee to my chest and pushing away, which has also helped to correct this. He also said that I should see a podiatrist. My questions are, what could be causing this rotation, glute med dysfunction, rounding of my right shoulder, cause my right hand, my writing one-handed hunch over working on the computer? I can't read, John.
No.
I haven't eaten in four and a half hours. Isn't seeing a podiatrist and getting shoe inserts or something just masking the problem? Is this something that means I cannot run in life? I'm only 18 and have had high hopes at marathon competition at a competitive level. Number four, could the problem be caused by running shoes? Would barefoot running be different? Please help me. I'm distraught and want to have a long running career. What can I do? Thanks for your time, Tim from Brigham, England.
Birmingham, like the ice cream.
Brigham Young.
Brigham Young and Birmingham are two different things.
Brigham Women's.
Yeah. So, I mean, an interesting question. And we really get down to, like, biomechanics of, you know, what could be going on, and all of it is really, I mean, it, quite frankly, what's causing rotation, I have no idea. And in some ways, I don't care. If the stretching is helping, then the stretching is helping. I don't know what could be causing the rotation. Is it a true rotation? People that treat along the SI joint dysfunctions, in theory, if your SI joint becomes mobile, then you may have changes in the position of the pelvis. To be honest, I don't particularly subscribe to that theory of thought. I think that it could happen, but I don't know that I would be able to detect even if it did. But if the pelvis is rotated, we look at two dimensions or we look at three. So it could be muscle issues, it could be joint issues, or it could be both of them. So my best guess would be that it's something over time has caused you to probably have some shortened muscles on one side, some change in the way that you move, walk, run, whatever it is. The pain seems to be coming from the right calf, and which could mean that you've got some muscle imbalances there. It could mean that your running position is off. You may have some foot and ankle issues. You may have that hip issue that's causing it. It could be both of them. So it's really hard to say what might be causing the problem. But if you're able to identify some of the impairments, if there's muscle imbalance, if there's joint imbalance, and you can repair those impairments, then you may have some good success at alleviating the problems. And never really knowing if everything was correct, if you missed something, if you got everything, you know, those are the challenges of clinical work. I mean, so and over an email, it's even harder to try to figure out. Mm-hmm. Having someone do a running assessment on you may be helpful for you. Sometimes, and we're really talking like a biomechanics expert, like someone that's trained to evaluate your running form. Your physio may be qualified to do that, or there may be someone in your area that's better. I don't know the answer to that, but we can get some clues from the way that you walk, and then we can certainly get some clues from the way that you run. So, in terms of the shoulder, we see that seems to be a link between the opposite shoulder. It's not typically the same shoulder, so it's your right calf and then the right shoulder. I'd be less inclined to think that they're connected, but who knows? Number two, seeing a podiatrist and getting shoe inserts, masking the problem. Maybe, maybe not. The best use of shoe inserts or any type of insert or you know, orthopedic device would be to get you into a position so that the pain doesn't occur anymore. To some extent, if it solves your problem and the problem never comes back, then I probably don't care, because you can chase symptoms all day long and try to figure out what's going right, what's going wrong, and it's not always the easiest thing to do. But they don't necessarily have to be a long-term thing either. If you do see a podiatrist, if they're able to correct it with an insert and you're able to run again while you work on your whatever problems you may have, then I'd say it's probably worth it, and it's not something that you shouldn't necessarily look into. But I do agree that if all you do is get an insert and you don't at least make the attempt, then it is probably masking a problem. But again, if your goal is to run and you can run with shoe inserts, then what really is the problem? Number three, is it something that means I cannot run in life? Probably not. Don't worry about it. It's it gone untreated. Maybe this will affect you long term, but you're treating it now. You're looking into the problem. I would be shocked if you can never run again. And then, could it be caused by running shoes? Absolutely, it could. Would barefoot running be different? I don't know the answer. There is some good recent work looking at barefoot running that seems to indicate that it may be helpful in certain situations.
Do you like those footies things?
Yeah, the barefoot runners. Yeah. I can't remember. You know what? I mean,
I'll find the name for him.
Yeah, the biomechanics professor here at UDEL actually has become a huge fan of barefoot running, and I'm not going to disagree with her.
Vibram Five Fingers.
Yeah, there you go. Vibram Five Fingers. It's a difficult thing to take up. I've seen it go both ways. I've seen people come in with horrible, horrible foot pain and leg pain because they tried these things out and they just did too much too soon, mm-hmm. and they weren't capable of working to that extent that quickly. I've seen other people swear by them. What we might expect is that, you know, when people look at barefoot running, they're kind of looking at, well, we never used to have shoes back in the day when we ran to catch food. So why is it a bad thing, and why did we decide that we needed sneakers and shoes and things that mask that? So I have to say that there's logic to that. I don't know if it's true, but it's certainly, you can see the logic in that. If we were designed to be running basically barefoot, why is it that not running barefoot would be better?
Well, it's because we've evolved as a society, and for the first 20 years...
Not as a physiological being.
No, but I'm saying, you start off your first, I don't know, when you start running, like 20 years of your life, and you're wearing shoes, and you're running in shoes, and then you go to something like this, yeah. Like, problems are going to pop up?
Yeah, but it's not necessarily true. We don't know if problems will or won't pop up. It may be beneficial. You know, we've certainly, like, if you take the step back, biomechanics are a good way to lead your eyes. They're a good, and lead your hands too. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to put things together and say, you know what, this may be caused because of that. That may have been caused because you changed your sneakers, you know, whatever it is. But biomechanics don't always pan out. So it's very important to not assume that we know everything biomechanical model, but to ignore the biomechanics I think is equally bad too. And you should use those biomechanics because it helps to piece together a picture of what potentially may be wrong. But just saying that, okay, well, you know, all these problems that we have are caused by our sneakers, we don't know that. We don't really have definitive research to that. We just don't. And there are just so many possible issues that could, you know, cause your knees to hurt, cause your back to hurt. To claim that it's just our use of sneakers, it would be mind-boggling. I mean, there's just no way. But could it be part of the problem? I don't see why not. But could sneakers be part of the solution too? I don't see why not either. In theory, they're cushioning. They're helping distribute forces when, you know, worn correctly and fitted correctly and designed correctly. So there are arguments both ways, and we just don't have an answer to it. If someone wants to try, you know, like Vibram Five Fingers, I say go for it. There's some indication that they can be very good for you, and I don't see why that would be a problem. But I think that you also, just like anything else, you know, if I decide that I want to run a marathon, I don't go out and run 20-something miles to start. I go out and I run maybe, you know, a quarter mile, half a mile if I've never run before. The same thing happens with barefoot running. You can't just, even if you're a seasoned runner, you can't just start running barefoot and run your same mileage. You will die. So I think chances are that if barefoot running does have an advantage, and, you know, like I said, there's certainly been good arguments and some good studies that showing that there could possibly be an advantage to it, you've still got to respect the fact that you're significantly changing the way that you practice and the way that you train, and you have to start up just like you did on day one and take it slowly so that you can build your body up to being able to do that. Once you do, maybe there's an advantage. I don't have the answer to that. No one does just yet, but there could be.
Gotcha. We'll definitely come back to it. I just don't, it's like violent pounding of the feet into the pavement whenever you're running on those things. And maybe this is something I need to experience myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it again, and it also brings up a good point. You know, we run on pavement, and that actually kind of, that can argue the other side, that we need sneakers based on the surfaces that we run on now. You know, in the past, we would not have been running on pavement. So maybe our feet aren't designed to run on pavement, and maybe we need further cushioning to protect ourselves from the surfaces that we run on now. You know, that could be argued too. I don't know the answer to it. But, you know, maybe if you're going to barefoot run, maybe trail running is the best way to do that. I don't know. But it does – it's a really interesting topic, and I think that both sides have some merit to them. I'd be lying if I said I've really looked into the research, but I have seen a couple pretty good research articles that are showing at least some initial possible benefit. You certainly get greater activity of the intrinsic muscles of the foot, which in theory can help you to prevent certain issues that we all seem to have these days, pronation and where, you know, heel strike versus forefoot strike and midfoot strike things. So the way that we actually, our foot hits the ground when we run, when you wear a sneaker, it changes the way that you actually hit the ground, and that can change the forces that yet you experience as it runs up the chain, and that in that could be a problem. So there are a lot of interesting arguments for it. I used to be a lot more like, there's no way this can be good for you, and I got to say, I think I've seen some pretty convincing evidence to suggest that it could be okay. Gotcha. And actually pretty good.
Cool. Well, that's where we're going to wrap it up, because we've been here for
ever
2.5 hours. So that's where it's going to end. But please make sure to continue to send in. We will hopefully have the mailbag set up, the voice mailbag set up for next week. So you can do that. Send those in at either 978-633-3488, or you can send them to our fantastic new line at 775-45-FITCAST. You can leave a message on there. And Bob, we do have a couple that we did get to this week because of the recording snafus, but we'll get to them. And that's it. Don't forget to check out thefitcast.com, subscribe through iTunes, please submit a review, make sure to keep checking out the Destination Apps blog posts that we're going to be putting up, and hopefully I'll have a review for Assessing Correct on the site by then too. Great DVD. If you haven't already picked it up, check it out at assessingcorrect.com, I think. Or just go to ericcressy.com or robsontrainingsystems.com. Or what's Bill Hartman's website? John?
Isn't it just BillHartman.net?
It's BillHartman.net. Check out the site too. Alright, I'm tired, I'm hungry. We're going to get out of here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for dealing with the little technical difficulties that we've had this week. Hopefully this show doesn't sound too rough. We'll see you next time, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Right, John? Oh, that was a technical difficulty. Happy Thanksgiving, yep.
What do you mean? You can't end it like that?
Yeah, you had a technical difficulty. You were like, that's what I heard. Yeah.
No, it works fine. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgving.
For the Americans. Because no one else is in Canada.
That's true.
Yeah. So if you're outside of America,
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. Enjoy work. I'll be easy.